Tripod New Orleans at 300 dives into the city's messy relationship with water through a new series called NOLA versus Nature. Today, WWNO's original history show looks at the worst flood in New Orleans history. Well, before Katrina.
It's spring of 1849. The Mississippi River is bursting at the seams. The river rises every spring, but this particular spring, it's getting unusually high. A man named Pierre Sauvé is nervously watching this happen. He owns a sugar plantation just above New Orleans, along a super sharp bend in the river. This makes him extra vulnerable, and he knows it. Sauvé does not want his plantation to flood. But then, on May 3rd, 1849, his levees break. And it's a nightmare. This is Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan Levinson.
That looks like public access to me.
Oh, yeah.
Shall we?
Let's do that.
We just walked up the crest of the natural levee at the point where, on May 3rd, 1849, high river water tore through the much lower levee at that time and ended up in one of the worst floods in New Orleans history.
That's Richard Campanella, a geography professor at Tulane University. We took a little field trip out to the site where Pierre Sauvé's plantation once stood, in what is today's River Ridge neighborhood. I think it's because we were talking about water, and so therefore the coastal reporter at WWNO, Travis Lux, got jealous. He wanted to come along. Hi, Travis.
Hey, Lane, what's up? You're right. I totally got jealous.
That's okay.
So the reason we went out to the levee is we went out to see what it looks like right now, right off of Sauvé Road. And you know, it's pretty much what you'd expect. It's a long man-made hill of dirt that looms above the houses that it's protecting. It's covered in grass.
The bike trail is up here. There's someone walking a dog.
But in 1849, this would have been all sugarcane fields. And the levees, they were only 4 feet high.
You could see over it.
Craig Colton is a geographer at LSU.
They were look more like bumps in the road, more like big speed bumps made of dirt.
He says back then, each plantation owner was responsible for building and maintaining his own levees, which means each plantation owner enlisted the enslaved people on the plantation to do the actual building and maintaining.
And this was just people piling up dirt for the most part, people who didn't have any engineering training or experience.
But there were no guidelines for how to build a levee, so everyone's looked a little different, pretty hodgepodge. But they all had one thing in common. They were all low.
And the water that spring of 1849 was high. And on May 3rd, the levee cracks.
Back then, they would have called this crack in the levee a crevasse, which is French for crevice. Today, we just call it a levee breach.
Right, and that's what happened on May 3rd, right on Pierre Sauvé's land. Hence the name, Sauvé's Crevasse. Geographer Richard Campanella says that first day,
you would see gushing water right next to us.
And in a matter of hours, there was a breach that was several feet wide, and water was flowing through that.
So Sauvé's watching this water gush through his dinky levees, and he's frustrated. But he's not completely freaking out yet. He thinks the crevasse can be plugged with sandbags. Richard Campanella.
Basically, the form it would have taken would have been kind of a bucket brigade of people on either side passing sandbags and kind of gingerly dropping them down and hoping they hold enough for that person to step out on it and extend it.
So they try this for a day.
And then another day.
And another day.
But this sandbag approach was no match for the crevasse. Water kept gushing through, and it started to travel beyond Sauvé's property. His plantation was upriver from New Orleans. Back then, it was all mostly swampland, and so it took a few days for those in the city to even hear that this was happening. But then, on the fifth day, the water arrived.
And that's when it turned from a rural flooding into an urban disaster.
You're listening to Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan Levinson.
And I'm Travis Lux.
And we have a great first-person description of it from, I believe he was a Picayune reporter, and he perched himself up at the highest point in the city at that time, the dome above the St. Charles Hotel. So he goes up there, and he said it looks like Venice.
But without the gondolas.
But you have people getting stranded right away.
Greg O'Brien is a history professor at the University of North Carolina in Greensboro.
You know, water got as deep as at least 6 feet in some areas. So pretty dangerous, particularly if people couldn't swim. The estimates were over 200 city squares were underwater. 12,000 people were forced out of their homes. Gardens are destroyed.
And
there were reports of, you know, an inordinately high number of alligators and snakes, you know, in the city streets.
Hashtag Louisiana.
Hashtag classic.
Anyway, this is all happening, and a month later, that crevasse still hasn't been plugged. Water's still gushing out, and it's rising. So where's the government this whole time? LSU geographer Craig Colton.
There was no systematic citywide or state response, no relief effort for all these people. People were on their own.
Quick background here. New Orleans at the time had no centralized government. Instead, there were three separate governments, each in charge of a few wards. And because the levee failure happened outside the city on private property, none of those three governments wanted to take responsibility. And so instead of fixing the problem, local officials argued about who should fix the problem, which really means
they do next to nothing.
Greg O'Brien says the worst flooding was happening in the lowest parts of the city, what today is Treme and the Upper French Quarter. The people living there were recent immigrants from Europe and African Americans. Here's Craig.
These were poor people, and they had the least access and the least ability to cope with this.
But they had to cope.
People built makeshift elevated walkways. Every boat that was in the city was conscripted and put into use as to help people move their furniture out of their flooded houses to enable people to get from place to place, for people to sell food from these boats.
To give you a sense of the size of this thing, if you look at a flood map of Sauve's crevasse, water covered two-thirds of today's city footprint. It was huge and growing by the day, as were people's frustrations. The government was MIA, and historian Greg O'Brien says people started figuring out ways to stick it to the man.
A grocer named E.B. White.
Not that E.B. White.
Very publicly says he will continue to deliver groceries by boat if necessary to get to people's homes, but he refuses to deliver to any member of the various municipal city councils.
Got him.
Got him. So the government's MIA, and people take it upon themselves to stop the water. They start building these little DIY dirt levees right in the street to protect their property. But when they do that, the water goes towards other people's property. This causes some problems.
People start threatening each other, destroying each other's faux levees. They form these posses or pulling out weapons. No one was actually killed, but it got ugly.
Meanwhile, some people want to actually go see the crevasse for themselves, which really was a sight. A month after it first happened, that crack had widened to 300 feet, a whole football field wide.
I mean, it was a spectacle. It was a visual spectacle. Steamboat companies would run daily packets, and they would have bands on board so people could listen to music while they're chugging up the river with the paddle wheelers churning up the river, and then they'd pass back and forth in front of the breeze so people could see the water churning through this break in the levee.
Wow. This is some full-blown 19th century disaster tourism stuff.
The city did eventually get its act together. Once it became clear that Sauve couldn't handle the breach on his own, officials from the three governments formed a committee to solve the problem. They sent some engineers up to try to plug it. They had a hard time with it at first. They tried dumping tons of sandbags. That didn't work. They even tried to sink a riverboat, hoping it would just get stuck in the hole and clog it up. That didn't work either. So then finally, a full 48 days later, the river goes down. They build a floodgate, and the big flood of 1849 is finally over.
It was the year that everyone, for a number of years later, would think back upon as that was a really bad flood year.
People would have been talking about pre-crevasse, post-crevasse,
yeah,
kind of.
Yeah. A watershed moment.
Sauve's crevasse put a lot of pressure on the city and state to make some big changes.
It became something of a rallying cry for better levees along the Mississippi River. Eventually, the government starts managing the levees. Guys like Sauvé are off the hook.
It wasn't just the levees. People realized city government needed an overhaul, too. Again, Craig Colton.
Having three separate municipalities didn't really work. They needed to reconsolidate and have one mayor, one city council, and one city government.
So they do. And some people feel comforted that now one government can tackle these big problems. People at the back of town, though, on the low ground, they remain skeptical. But for those people on the high ground near the newly engineered levees, they're more optimistic. Like, the next time something like this happens, it won't be nearly as bad. The city is divided between those that have less faith and those that think maybe, maybe that was the last big flood. Tripod is a production of WWNO New Orleans Public Radio in collaboration with the Historic New Orleans Collection and the Midlow Center for New Orleans Studies at UNO. Special thanks to Evan Christopher for our opening theme music, to my editor, Eve Abrams, to the entire Tripod editorial committee, and Tripod interns Tori Bush and Michael Sarasso. Catch Tripod on the air Thursdays during Morning Edition and again on Mondays during All Things Considered. You can hear Tripod anytime, anywhere by subscribing to the podcast, which I know you do, Travis.
Heck yeah, I do. And I wrote a review, so obviously all of you should as well. Go to iTunes, rate the show, write a review, and don't forget, this is the first in a three-part series called NOLA versus Nature. Next week, we're going to take a look at another way we face off against water in this city, the pumps.
That's next week. Don't miss it. In the meantime, go to our Instagram and Facebook pages to see a flood map of the damage done by Sauvé's crevasse and much, much more. And now, Travis, I'll let you do the honors.
I'm Travis Lux, and I'll tripod you later.